Chapter 5. The Fate of Ulinor. Mariazette Isolde wore the shape of a shuffling Adeptus Mechanicus menial priest, convincingly. She hobbled her way through red-lit decks, crammed with servitor crew, her false implant broadcasting forged Adeptus Mechanicus identification codes. She had Yendel to thank for those. Without the Temple Vanus infosite, the cell would have been discovered a long time ago. Isolde missed her expertise. Operating on Mars had become difficult since Yendel's death. She wasn't confident she could maintain the pretense, but her death did not matter. Only the mission did. She was to bear witness to the destruction of Ulinor from within the Mechanicus ship. The Arch-Majesty was immense, a huge inverted pyramid staffed by hundreds of thousands of Adeptus Mechanicus tech priests and their lobotomized slaves. No one paid her any attention. She went at a measured pace, not wishing to bring attention to herself as a shirker or someone in an unusual hurry. The command deck was her goal. Isolde was circumspect in her work, and she was on her highest level of alert. Clanking men machines lumbered past her, wheezing aseptic breath. Choirs of lowly adepts sang hymns to placate the spirit of the Arch-Majesty's many machines, while higher-ranking priests conducted inscrutable rituals. Isolde walked by. She took the least-used ways upward, transit tubes used mainly by servitors. Their blank-eyed stares passed over her with no more interest than if she'd been an empty fuel canister. Her codes, marking her as a member of Kubik's personal household, gave her access to most areas of the ship, except the command deck. Getting in there was the difficulty. The fabric of the Arch-Majesty thrummed to the song of titanic energies as the Adeptus Mechanicus prepared for the conclusion of their grand experiment. Not, as secretly planned, the removal of Mars from the Sol system, but the destruction of the Orc's capital, a fitting test of the new and terrifying matter displacement technologies plundered from the Greenskins. Odd whoops and growls sounded from vents and shafts as she passed them. The vibrations of the ship changed in frequency and violence as the vast banks of teleporters grafted to the Arch-Majesty's frame were cycled up and down in repetitive test runs. She neared the centre of the vessel where the command deck was situated. The Adeptus Mechanicus favoured burying their command sections deep in their craft for maximum survivability. There was a paucity of windows on an Arch vessel. All sight was provided remotely by the grace of the machine god. A corridor with a pronounced declivity led down to the cradle housing the command decks. She slowed. Her identity would take her no further. Streams of adepts went to and fro, passing from side rooms and engine halls to join the ceaseless flow of augmented humanity. The number of servitor crew declined as the number of adepts increased, until, close to the great reinforced blast doors of the command deck, the tech priests outnumbered the mindless cybernetic constructs 3-1. Those servitors that were present stamped past in large groups, headed by Genitus Primus. A few others were heavy combat drones stationed at strategic points. These comprised the torsos of dismembered men plugged directly into track units, their arms replaced by potent weaponry. She scanned the crowds until she found what she was looking for. A middle-ranking Magos Metallicus Transmechanic with a face of flesh. It was crucial her mark have no obvious facial augments. That would be too hard to mimic. On a starship, the Metallicus' principal duties were confined to repairs. A busy man in a battle, but today he would have little to do. He headed with purpose down a narrow gangway. Isolde followed, striding after him as if she'd always intended to go that way. The gangway opened up into a large, tiered hall. On each level, the walls were studded with heavy copper hand grips, set in pairs. As she followed the Magos, a troop of electro-priests came marching into the hall, singing devotional cant to the body electric and the motive force. They filed in, taking up station by the contacts and grasping them with both hands. Accidental electrical discharge buzzed and filled the space with the smell of sharp ozone. The Magos Metallicus strode on through another, even bigger space, filled to within half a metre of the walls with a gigantic machine from whose depths multiple lights shone. Tech priests moved painfully around the outside, sometimes on their knees, mechadendrites and ancillary limbs snaking out to make minute adjustments. Past this, the Magos Metallicus turned into a vestibule sandwiched between the corridor and a third chamber. Through the doorway into this further hall, Isolde glimpsed tall plasma coils wreathed in crackling loops of green energy, and she had the notion that she looked upon technology engineered from the greenskins. The tech priest went into a small door set into the wall of the vestibule. Isolde ducked through and found herself in a small storeroom, hanging with neatly bunched cables, labelled carefully in Lingua Technis. She moved so quietly that the man did not notice her at first. When he selected a cable, turned round and saw her, the flesh of her face was already transforming itself into a passing resemblance of his own. She cast her hood back so he could see her features run. He let out a surprised electronic burble from a vox box implanted in his neck at the sight of her. Isolde cursed inwardly. She had not seen that augmentation. Most of the tech priests had such things to allow them to speak the machine language, but they were not always so obvious. She killed him, quickly, her exotic sword springing out from its housing on the back of her arm and taking him through the eye. Ignoring the crawling feeling as her face rearranged itself, she stripped the Magos's outer garments off and replaced them with her own, then, kneeling, pulled out a sharp knife and began to cut. His intelligence core was easy to find in his skull, which was a small blessing, for the cybernetics of the Mechanicus followed no standard pattern, and it could as easily have been implanted in his leg as his head. She wiped the blood off her hand, sheathed her knife, and paused. He still held the cable in his dead hand. He'd evidently got it for something, and so she spent a valuable moment debating whether to take the cable or not. In the end, she decided to leave it behind. She checked her unit was broadcasting the dead Magos's codes, opened the door, and stepped out. She allowed the door to slide shut and fried its locking mechanism, then set out for the command deck. Fabricator General Kubik surveyed the command deck of the Ark Majesty. Here was his kingdom in microcosm, and he was well pleased with its efficiency. Men, machines, and blends of the two performed their duties to the 95th percentile of perfection.
"Provide mark. Synchronize time between target system and Ulanor system," he commanded.
"Yes, Prime of Primes,"
intoned a crowd of tech adepts. Tasks ordinarily performed by hardwired servitors were being undertaken by adepts. This was an operation too important to be trusted to the mono-tasked. An enormous brass-handed chrono ticked down to zero.
"Artisan, trajectory Van Auken, prepare for planetary teleportation," said Kubik. "The time of projection is closing."
Van Auken had been a large man before his numerous augmentations. With them, his appearance evoked a mechanical bear.
"The Corpuscari are ready, Fabricator General. They stand prepared to unleash their life force in the service of the Omnissiah,"
he answered with exaggerated humility. Kubik favoured him with a nod. It had been Van Auken who hit upon using the cults of electro-priests. Their intuitive manipulations of the motive force had stabilized the meshing of imperial and orcish technology. This one idea had cast down all remaining barriers to success. Their recent trials had worked perfectly. The grand experiment was an experiment no more. The Adeptus Mechanicus were ready to move a planet. The Chrono's hands shifted closer to the instant of success. A grand flotilla of ships crowded the command deck's hololith. An endless stream of data poured through Kubik's multiple intelligence cores, filling him to the brim with delicious knowledge. Most of it was ephemeral, pointless, adding nothing to the grand store of knowledge the Adeptus Mechanicus had. The gravitic perturbations inflicted upon the ships by close proximity to each other could easily be calculated using existing formulae, as could the energy output of the combined engines of the fleet, the effects on the remaining astronomical bodies of the system once Ulanor was removed, and a million other readings. As such, it was all useless, but it would never be forgotten. For the time being, Kubik enjoyed the rush of it, the way a man of more usual form enjoys the pleasure of hot water pouring from a cascade.
Imperial fleet shall be at safe distance in 600 hectoseconds, prime of primes, said the crafts artisan of the Vox.
Half of what was said aboard was twittered quickly in Banaric, the rest in lingua technis.
Planetary teleportation beam is powering, said Van Auken. Cut Vox traffic with Imperial craft, ordered Kubik. Artisan of the Vox, you are our line of communication with the greater fleet. Let no event or word distract us from the Omnishire's holy work.
The adept did as he was ordered, but the change in noise within the command deck was negligible.
Chosen and Ulanor will be at optimum alignment in 200 hectoseconds. Fleet at safe distance in 100 hectoseconds.
Prepare to engage Viridian plasma engines. Electro-priest manual regulator arrays on standby, said Van Auken.
Fleet at safe distance. Lord Protector Vangerich is making a speech, Prime of Primes, said the artisan of the Vox.
Kubik hunched at the mention of Vangerich's name, his mechanical appendages thrashing.
I do not wish to hear it. His speech is without purpose. The symbolic activities of the non-believer have no interest for me. Record it. Archive it. Add it to the sum total of all knowledge. We have work of our own. Extend matter collapse beam emitter.
The ship quaked. Rumbling clanks echoed throughout. Displays ran red and green with swift lines of data code. A final echoing clunk reverberated dully round the ship.
Beam emitter extended, came the report.
Kubik tensed. In response, his gravity chair rose a few centimetres from the deck. Success depended on timing. Ulanor had to be moved at exactly the right moment to displace the existing fourth world in the target system. Every datum he possessed predicted that the original fourth planet, Chosin, would enter into a disruptive orbit that would stabilise over time, allowing Ulanor to take its original orbital track. It was an immensely complex undertaking, and its calculation had required the efforts of thousands of Magi Logis. The possibility of destroying Chosin completely had been raised as a simpler alternative, but discarded. Its destruction would have resulted in an asteroid field of huge destructive potential right in Ulanor's path around its new star. Every variable had to be correct. Ulanor's velocity would not change when it was teleported, therefore it had to move at precisely the right time so that it would fall into orbit around its new star and pass close enough to Chosin to knock it aside without hitting it. If a single calculation were wrong and Ulanor's survival was detected, civil war was the likely outcome. The risk had been calculated as acceptable. Kubik wanted the world for himself. Ulanor was rich with unclaimed alien technology. The acquisition of knowledge superseded all other considerations.
Prepare to fire, said Kubik.
Imperial forces signalling their readiness, reported the artisan of the Vox.
Engage all reactors, relinquishing the holy flow to electro-priests, said Van Auken.
The large chrono counted down to zero, its three great hands coming together and stopping with a final metallic clunk.
Let the Imperial fleet see a spring Armageddon down on Ulanor, ordered Kubik.
The ship hummed with the songs of praise of its myriad crew. Green light pulsed from the hololith. A wavering beam of bright green energy slashed across space, stabbing into Ulanor's smouldering equator. It spread across the orcish capital world, consuming it with bright fire.
Atomic decoupling matrix stabilizing. Subspace transportation in 40 hectoseconds, said Van Auken.
The chatter of machines became synchronized as tech priests input the bewildering results of the Magi Logis' calculations. A rising howl built from the teleportation engines. In their galleries, electro-priests chanted melodic cant to swell the presence of the holy motive force. The Arch-Majesty trembled with a power building within it.
Quantum disassociation achieved. Matter potential neutral, engaging subspace teleport conduits, said another.
Dozens of hands and mechanical appendages depressed levers simultaneously. The singing of algebraical hymns rose in volume, lingua technis bass overlaid with a high register of binaric informational pulses. The ship's trembling became a quaking. A deep, metallic hum joined the noise of machinery and tech priests as the fabric of the vessel resonated in harmony to the prayers of its crew and the exertions of its devices. "Transmit," commanded Van Auken in Lingua Technis, Gothic and Binaric simultaneously. His mechadendrites speared from his broad back into a dozen ports arrayed around and above him. The ship vibrated with more than the unleashing of power. Reality trembled, pushing open a tear not into the warp, but into subspace, that strange ephemeral realm that existed between the universe of energy and the universe of matter. A burst of sparks shot out from an overloaded console. A number of hololiths blinked and went out. Lumens burst, cables ruptured, sending fatal arcs of electricity into a dozen tech priests as the motive force burst free. Bangs sounded from all over the deck as machines failed. Toxins rang, but their alarms were lost in the roar of the impossible science of the grand experiment. A mighty thrumming vibrated through the bones and bonded endoskeletal augments of everyone aboard. The tumult ceased abruptly, passing over and through the ship like an ocean breaker moving over a reef. The whine of machines quieted. The vibrating faded away into ever-decreasing, unpredictable aftershocks. On the last functioning hololith, space flashed with green lightning that faded slowly. When it did, Ulinor had gone. "Simple and elegant," said Van Auken. "Success is assured." Servitors thumped forward to remove the corpses of those tech priests who had given their lives in the service of the machine god.
"Contact Lord Vangarich. Inform him that the planet has been cast into the heart of the nearest blue supergiant hyperstar. Ulinor is no more," said Kubik. "Prepare my private pentair. He will wish to congratulate me personally. Van Auken, you shall accompany me as architect of this great endeavour. Have our astropaths signal the explorator teams. Ulinor is to be stripped to the core of useful technology, commencing immediately. No trace of the orcish presence upon the world can be left. The motive engines that move the crust must be dismantled. If the world is explored or settled, there shall be no indication that the orcs were ever there. I so command it."
"As you command, Prime of Primes," intoned his crew.
"All hail the Omnisire, he that giveth knowledge so that we might perform miracles in his name," said Kubik.
He powered his grav chair and ascended through a portal in the ceiling. There was no celebration from the crew of the Ark Majesty. They worked on without comment. Success was its own reward. At the back of the room, Isolde headed for the door. Isolde shed her Magos Metallicus disguise as soon as she was able. Reassuming the role of one of Kubik's household adepts, she headed off to decks unused by thinking beings. Servitors congregated there in their multitudes, but Isolde passed them unchallenged, her cowled form hidden by the soft red light of the lumens. Life support was at the minimum required to keep the servitor's organic components alive. She was shivering by the time she found a data conduit sized for humans to access and crawled inside. With numb fingers, she searched through a tangle of copper cables and shining fiber optics until she found an unshielded line. Her data spike slid into it easily enough, and once she had checked the crawl space both ways for Mechanicus repair vermin, she contacted the Grand Master. A black screen appeared on her palm-sized data slate, the coat of arms of the Assassinorum bold in white upon it.
"Red Haven, Mariazette Isolde, Temple Calidus," she said. "Confirm."
"Identity confirmed. Line checked. Line secure," said the slate.
Vangarich's face appeared a second later in grainy monochrome.
"Isolde, good to see you. Tell me now, can I believe what I just saw?"
"Regretfully no, Grand Master," she said. "They lied. They've moved it, not destroyed it. They're going to plunder it."
Vangarich looked away.
"Stupid," he said.
When he looked back, his eyes were hard.
"Where is Ulinor now?"
"I don't exactly know. I've got the name and the stellar signifier. The code puts it on the edge of the segmentum solar, and if it's named, it'll be on a chart somewhere. It did have 9 worlds orbiting a main-sequence yellow star not unlike Sol. The code is for an uninhabited system marked for colonization. They got quite agitated about moving Ulinor at exactly the right moment to displace the existing 4th world safely, a place called Chosin. So I don't know if that's of any worth as a planet. I can't tell you any more than what I've gleaned through eavesdropping. This ship has its data force encrypted so heavily it'll take a Vanus acolyte a week to get into it. I don't have the skills. I can't ex-load to you. Verbal report only.
Give me the code and name.
Yes, Grandmaster, she said. PLSS042002-9001. The prime assumptive world is Pellucidar. The system must be named for it.
Pellucidar? Never heard of it, said Vangerich. Good work, Isolde. Severing contact now.
The screen blinked out. Isolde stowed her data slate, checked outside, and slipped away.